Accession number 17819, Reel 2.
Mr. Sandland, Reel 2. How close to being injured did you come when that explosion took place?
Well, luckily we were in paddy field, so we were able to take cover straight away, but you could hear the shrapnel whizzing about just inches above you, you know. We laid close to the ground till the barrage was called off. But the man who had a sniper scope on his back, I think. This is a battery for charging up some light on the rifle. And it stuck proud from the paddy field, and it was all cut to ribbons when he saw it in the daylight. So it was a paddy field, really, that saved our lives. I think we'd have all copped it that night.
Which platoon were you in?
12th platoon.
And how did it happen that this barrage hit you?
Because we were in the wrong place. That's all I can assume. I can't think that the artillery would have fired in the wrong place. I think we were too far in to enemy lines when the barrage was called down. The barrage came down where it should, but I think we were too far in. I was walking about at night with nothing to give you any signs. It's very difficult to say exactly where you are, you know.
How are you supposed to tell exactly where you are under those conditions?
With an officer with you, he should have gone over the ground. He should have known it by heart, more or less, but then things always appear different on a map to what they do on the actual ground. So, you know, you can only tell by the size of hills and things like this. You when you take over a position, you look out in front of you and you see what ground you're defending, and you make out trees, gullies, anything that's unusual in the ground to give you some idea where you are when you're out in the night time.
When you go out on such a patrol, are you all in one long line?
Yes, but you're staggered, yes.
Whereabouts in the line were you?
I think I was at the back. Or near the back, because I was with the brain gun. I didn't have the brain gun, I was with the brain gun section.
Any other incidents that happened to you on patrols?
Just when we moved up to the hook, that's all. Before that, there was we had nothing really that occurred.
Which month might that patrol have been in, do you think?
That would be very early. That would be July, I think.
Can you tell me about moving up to the hook, please?
Yes. Well, I'd already been out of the line back in to base camp for training as an NCO, so I got a stripe then. So I was second in command of a rifle section. In charge of the brain gun section, in actual. But when we came to move up to the hook, they send up NCOs before the battalion goes up to get the lay of the land, the trenches, where the patrols are going to, where the enemy positions are, and anything of interest that we'd need to know. So you go up in the night, and then you're there in the morning. But I'd gone up there, and there was three or four lance corporals in up on the hill with me, with the American Marines. And when I got up there, I knew that hill was trouble. There was no trenches as we knew them. They'd have little foxholes at the front of the hill and big dugouts at the back of the hill, and they would defend it entirely different to us. And when we went up there, they were amazed at how the lack of automatic weapons we had, you know. So I was out on patrol. It was myself and another Lance Corporal from Lowestoft Way. We were out on patrol with three American Marines, daylight, just patrolling the hook to find the positions, an explosion of a high velocity shell came over and it blew us up. I think I was the only survivor of that patrol. I know the boy from Lowestoft was killed, and I know two of the Marines were dead, and the third one was in a terrible state. I suffered slight wounds. I wasn't very badly wounded, but I couldn't hear anything. I just had a ringing in my ears, and I was all black from the explosion. But I think what had saved my life is I was blown into a dugout. So I just had the blast hit me without the shrapnel, and I think that's the only way I came out of that. So from then on, I came off. I was evacuated from the hook to a Norwegian hospital. First of all, to an American base, where the padres told me I hadn't made my peace with God, and then I was taken to a Norwegian or Scandinavian field hospital, where I spent the night. And then I was evacuated to Seoul, to a hospital in the old university there.
Can you take me through, step by step, what do you remember on this patrol? Starting off about with where it was exactly.
Yeah, well, it was in the command post of the American Marines. We'd had a meal with them and chat and laugh. And then we started off on this patrol around the dugouts and the trenches, which took us to the front of the hill. And we must have been spotted moving or something like that. Because we never got no warning. The first shell hit us. And that was it. There's still continued shelling afterwards, but it was the first shell that done. If we'd have missed us with the first one, we could have took cover, but that first one hit us.
And what was the purpose of the patrol?
It was to find out where our positions would be on that hill at night when the rest of the battalion come in, so that I could take my section to whatever position we were allotted, and I would know the road down there, the trenches, the outlook on what we were looking for, what wire we were guarding, and this, that, and the other. And basically, so that there would be somebody up there who knew the area when the others moved in pitch dark.
So they were taking you out to show you the new Black Watch position?
Yes, that's right.
And you never actually got there?
Well, we were moving round them when we were hit.
What had made you, exactly had made you so uneasy when you saw the American methods of defence?
Well, they were all clustered together, great gangs of them in dugouts at the back of the pit, at the back of the hill, and the trenches at the front were non-existent. Those that had been there had been blown to smithereens, and nobody had bothered to make them any deeper. There was just little, I think they call them foxholes. But we're used to deep trenches with living on the front of the hill with dugouts and weapon pits all along the trenches, so that we can defend from the front of the hill, and we'd be there, and not in great numbers. There would be about two or three people to one weapon pit scattered along the front of the hill instead of, so if a shell came over, If at most it hit was three people, if it hit a weapon pit, but they were sort of all in a gaggle at the back there.
And this was the US Marines, not the US Army?
No, the US Marines, this was, yeah.
Did you make any comment to them, or?
No, I didn't have a chance, no. They were amazed at how thin on the ground we were going to be. They said we couldn't possibly defend the hook with the way we were going to do it. But
how many would they have had?
I don't know, but they're certainly thick on the ground. I couldn't tell you really, but there was loads of them up there.
What rank of Marine were you speaking to?
I think one was a sergeant, and the other two were privates, I think.
So how exactly did he put it when he heard about what the Black Watch proposed to do?
Early, he says, how many are you coming up here? I said, there'll be 30 of us on this position, a full platoon. And he couldn't comprehend that. They'd probably have 60 men on there, I suppose, double the amount. Plus, they'd have these big Browning guns and all that automatic weapons. Whereas we still had the old Lee Enfield rifles. We had Sten guns, which weren't a lot of use because they get jamming up. But we'd had some Browning guns allocated to us, but only one for a section or something like that. Yeah.
What were these Browning guns?
They were heavy machine guns, as opposed to the Bren guns, which were medium machine guns. We had our own machine guns. We had Vickers, but they were in a section of their own in what they would call support company, and they would be allocated to if there was a vulnerable position or a good spot for shooting out across to the valley to the Chinese positions, they would be situated there.
And which section of the hook were the Black Watch due to go into?
I don't know. Warsaw was in front of us. A little spur called Warsaw, that was in front of us. And I don't know.
Can we go back to your medical treatment and what happened to you then, please?
Yeah, first I was inspected by a doctor in the American place at the back there, the aid station. I had a forehead wound and peppered with shrapnel. Not very big wounds, but the forehead wound worried them more than anything else. And I was put on a transporter and taken out on a stretcher to the Scandinavian first aid station. And I can remember being in there. I think I was there at the... They were waiting for casualties because I think I was the only one in there. A Swedish doctor read my name and he said, "Oh, you're from Scandinavia. That name," he says, "is a Norwegian name." So I remember spending the night in there, but I can remember I must have been in shock because I spent the whole night sort of shivering. The next day I was taken out to the main hospital in Seoul.
It sounds as though you were very lucky.
Very lucky, yeah.
Did it take you long to recover?
Not physically. Mentally it did. I was back up in the hook. I don't know how long it was. After that, a lot of my memories are vague. I can remember going back up the hook for a different. I think they'd been at the hook again by then. But I remember being dropped off at the bottom of the hill, and my ears were still ringing. And I thought, this isn't a lot of joy because I can't hear anything coming in, you know. And I walked up that hill and I felt really dejected. And from then on, where I was sort of perhaps a bit gung-ho and happy-go-lucky before that incident, I was very careful afterwards. The ears got better, I must admit, after a week, I suppose. But when I first got out of hospital and went up that hill, I couldn't really hear clearly.
In what way had this affected you psychologically? Just making you dejected?
No, making me more careful. We'd had a hammering on the hook, and I realised there's a lot of casualties, and I thought, well, as time is getting nearer and nearer to go home, this would be after Christmas, I suppose, and I knew I'd do it come home in about March, something like that. So I used to duck a little bit earlier than what I used to be when I first got there, and I wouldn't take any chances.
What was the date when you were wounded? Do you know?
It was the 2nd of November.
Any incidents that you remember afterwards, when you went back the second time?
I can remember being heavily shelled and hearing the trumpets of the Chinese coming up the hill, but I don't think they came up our hill because we didn't get overrun or anything, so we were just sort of covering another section. That must have been the second Battle of the Hook.
Did you go back into D Company?
No, I was transferred to B Company because I think B Company didn't perform very well. I think they were trying to stiffen it up a bit, so they transferred some fellas. Well, as I'd been made up to a Lance Corporal, they transferred me to B Company.
How did you find B Company after the other one?
I didn't like it as much, as I'd lost all my old buddies. This was the reason, I suppose. If you're a corporal in charge of your old buddies, then it's very difficult to make your orders stick, you know. So I think they transfer you as a matter of course eventually to another company. I can't even remember the company commander's name of B Company. That's how much I was disenchanted with it. I never sort of got into being a member of B Company.
And which platoon were you in?
Maybe 4, 5, or 6. I can't remember that. I think it was 4 platoon.
And what did you find when you got back to the battalion after being in hospital?
I remember coming out the line before Christmas. We had Christmas out the line. We had a good Christmas. We had a few beers and we had some whiskey sent out from Scotland. I think nearly every man had a bottle of whiskey and we had a good Christmas. And then we were due to go back in the line before the new year, and I think the brigade commander came out and said he'd never send a Scottish battalion into the line for New Year, so we had the new year out and all, so we were like, is the song getting you? So we had a good new year out the line and all, and then after that, I cannot remember what hill we went back on. I remember being with another American unit. It was called the Rock of the Marne Regiment. They were not Marines. They were just an ordinary American battalion, and they were doing this broadcasting across the valley with the big tannoys up, you know. I can remember being with them, but I can't remember where it was. And then the next thing that I can remember was I can remember some patrols, but nothing that's in the snow. I can remember the ice and snow and that very cold weather and going out on patrols. I was leading patrols at that time of up to 4 men or something like that because of having a stripe. So I was taking 3 or 4 men out on patrol. They would be sort of listening patrols or recce patrols around to other units and things like this. And making sure that our listening patrols are all right.
Did you... any incidents happen on those patrols?
No, I can't honestly say that there was anything.
Do you think, coming back, you said there was this Tannoy output.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it had any effect on the Chinese?
No, it was all propaganda, give and take. We'd find messages on our wire. They knew we were there. You'd find a card saying "Welcome, Black Watch" or something like this on your barbed wire. They'd been there in the night, obviously, and crept up to the wire.
How could they possibly know which unit you were?
Ah, because we had porters, and you can't tell one Korean from another. You don't know whether they're North Korean or South Korean.
Did you know what Chinese units were in front of you?
No, no. We weren't told. Our intelligence might have known. I think they did know, but it never got back to the rank and file.
Did you ever take any Chinese prisoners?
No. I saw one that was captured, but he made a run for it and he got shot for his trouble, so I think I was back at a base camp then when I saw that.
Did you see him run off?
Mm-hmm. And he wouldn't stop, so they just opened up with him.
Why do you think he did such a foolish thing?
Probably he'd been told that they would kill him anyway, I don't know, or torture him. You don't know what propaganda they were given.
Was he in the hands of the British or the Americans?
He was in the hands of the British.
Did you see much of the enemy dead?
Saw occasional bodies, yes. If you went out on patrol, sort of early evening, before it got really black, then you might see the occasional body or piece of body, you know, especially around the Hook area.
What impression did you get of the equipment that the Chinese had?
I thought it was primitive. I suppose they were well clothed. They were padded in these little padded suits. I suppose they were warm. But they had these machine guns. We used to call them burp guns because of the sound they made when they went off. But I don't think they were too effective.
What do you think today about having taken part in the Korean War?
Today, I feel good about it. But at first, I couldn't understand why we were fighting for such a desolate country. But having been back there in 94, I realised that we'd done some good.
In what way?
Well, they've got a bustling economy, and I was coming on for a bit of fire at the moment. The children are all happy. I've never seen so many smiling children in all my life. Even the older children, I've seen them at these Korean centres, and they're all singing and laughing and having a good time. I think they, and their education, I think, is very good. Maybe we were showing what we had to be shown, but on the surface of it, they seem to think a lot of us for being out there. They've made that clear that they appreciate what we've done, which is another a little feeling of good. You know, you feel good about it.
Can you tell me about how it all ended and how you came back?
Well, I came back because I was due to be demobbed anyway. I'd done my 2 years. So I was disembarked, came back to England. I got back in time for the coronation in May, I believe it was. So I got home about early May or something like that. We stopped all the way home at the usual stopping places. Had a good trip home.
What condition were you in by the time you got back home?
I thought I was all right, but I was out. I'd married before I went to Korea, and I was out with my wife when I got back, walking across some fields, and a jet flew over low, and I threw myself in the hedge without thinking, which I felt very foolish about, but it was just an instinct. This was early days when I first got back.
You didn't have any long-term physical or psychological consequences?
No.